Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Small beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a savvy
special sauce, lettuce, cheese.
Small beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a savvy
special sauce, lettuce, cheese.
Small beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese.
This is like political smelling sauce to me, as we are joined by Rita Cosby.
And I love opening with McDonald's theme song. You know it's going to be a big day when you're talking about McDonald's.
Well, it's Mickey D's day here as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast. Because outside, the fear, fright, hysteria, and hype of the snow alert.
Snowmageddon, right, with his 1 to 2 inches. It's nothing. This
right.
is child's play, Curtis.
As translated into the hawk is talking. That's right. The hawk is talking out there. It's starting to get cold, so that means whatever precipitation is going to hit the ground, the asphalt, the sidewalks, could well end up freezing, and then you end up with black ice, white ice, all kinds of ice, iced tea, ice cube, vanilla ice, all those ices.
You and I are both Polish. This is a Polish summer. You know, this is child's play.
That's right. And in fact, tomorrow, Rita, we have both been invited, along with my girlfriend, Nancy Regula, who's full Polish, to the Polish embassy, where there'll be a sashing of next year's Grand Marshal for the Pulaski Day Parade. It is not you gavons out there. An honor bestowed to Roman Polanski, that pedophile on a pedestal.
Thank
a lot of people
goodness.
They come to me and they say, oh, you honor Roman Polanski? I said, no, you jerky boy. It's General Pulaski, General Kosciuszko. Remember the American Revolutionary War? They were key components of that to help General Washington fight off the Red Horde of the Brits. But, boy, that is a continuing battle. Although, few words I will give at the sashing tomorrow, I will actually compare Norway and all the squareheads who don't want to come here to all the Poles who do, and I hear many of them illegally already, or they're in transition, you know, they're trying to get naturalized, or they're already citizens.
And you know the issue too, Curtis, and you and I know this well, and I think most of our listeners probably don't realize this. Here is Poland, who has been alongside, as you talk about the history of Poland, you know, saving George Washington's life. I mean, you know, you think of the history and the bonding between great Poles and great Americans. It's the foundation of our country. You go to West Point, too. You see the monument to Kosciuszko and the Kosciuszko cadets.
And just to point out to people, there was a raging debate at that point. Kosciuszko, who believed that the United States needed not just a military academy, but one that specialized in developing engineers, convinced George Washington, who was from Virginia, to side against his fellow Virginian, Thomas Jefferson, and not put the U.S. military academy somewhere in Virginia, and instead put it up to where George Washington had a very bad taste in his mouth. Because remember, when he was running up the Hudson River away from the Brits, he was there to meet Benedict Arnold, one of his best generals.
Yes, and of course, he's the one who exposed Benedict Arnold. He tried to steal the plans, of course, for West Point.
Right.
And so here are Poles who time and time again are right by America's side. They're by, you know, our side in Afghanistan and Iraq. And yet they need a visa to come to this country. It's ridiculous.
Not only ridiculous, but think of it. When the president visited Poland, thousands came out. He had his best reception of any country in the world that he has gone to.
He is beloved, by the way, in
Poland.
The
only thing they didn't do in Poland was the sword dance like the Saudis did. But when has the president ever been to Norway? He's never been to Norway. If he were to go to Oslo, I guarantee you there would be demonstrations galore in that socialist country.
And by the way, since all the comments, and the reason we're talking about it, of course, is all the comments that were made during that very heated S-hole meeting that we've all heard about at the White House, where it was brought up, hey, you know, don't go to those S-hole countries, don't bring refugees from there, let's go to Norway. Well, since that time, I've even heard reports of people in Norway who were not happy with the president. So even though he's complimenting them, and then as you point out, there's this great country that we love so much and that loves America, Poland, and Poland needs to be right there front row and center and say, look, this is a model of countries that really care about. And by the way, Poland is also tough in terms of crime. They're tough. They are patriotic through and through. And I agree, Poland needs to be front row and center, not Norway.
And remember, they stared down Vladimir Putin, who said, if you accept the defensive missiles that Barack Obama is offering you, we will incinerate you. The Poles didn't bat an eyelash and said, go ahead, incinerate us. We're taking the missiles.
Yeah, Poles
Whereas
have stood
other,
up.
Other European countries immediately shrank away and said, you know something, Barack? Maybe you ought to keep your missiles.
Well, that's why those Poles fight time and time again. You know, my dad was a freedom fighter in Poland. He was part of the Home Army. And Poles don't back down from a fight. In World War II, my dad used to sign the symbol saying, so Poland fights. We stand up.
I have no relationship to this president. As you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Trump over the years. He's not going to listen to me. But you have your connections. You are beloved by this president.
I got my connections, baby.
Why can't you somehow filter out to him? Knock off the Norway, the squarehead stuff. First of all, how many are coming in here and overstaying their visas? Probably none. We can't ask the Department of Homeland Security's Arena because she doesn't know anything about Norway. She made a fool out of herself yesterday at that Senate hearing.
And you're convinced, by the way, that she's Norwegian and Danish,
yeah,
right?
Look at her last name, right? Look at her first name. Look how she spells it.
By the way, the other half of me, as you know, my father's Polish, the other half of me is Norwegian and Danish.
So
I'm a walking UN right here.
You like Fisker balls, lutefisk, you like reindeers, and most importantly, you're a squarehead, like Norwegians.
I like a little aquavit, you know, for morning.
And by the way, once our Department of Homeland Security, Zarina, who replaced Kelly when he became chief of staff for Trump, when she finally learns about Norway, I'd like her to give me the analytics of how many Norwegians have illegally entered into our country, either through the north, which they would prefer, Canada, the Canadian border, in their reindeer, in their sleighs,
right,
or through Mexico, which the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Norwegians would really stand out there. So I don't think they'd be coming. But I would bet you there are a few, if any, who have overstayed their visas or have tried to get in here illegally. They don't want to come here. So why does the president and his allies keep mentioning them? She mentioned the Poles. Anyway, that'll be part of our presentation tomorrow at the Sashing at the Polish Embassy.
And I love that you're talking about that, by the way. I love it
because
I think it is so important. And Poland deserves the recognition. And by the way, in the history, Poland's a great example too, Curtis, because in the history, Poland, of course, back then, during all the communist time, they were fleeing. So these were folks who back then were fleeing a terrorist, you know, a very, very difficult, terrible regime.
My experience,
but good folks
in Poland, as I was traveling from the old East Berlin behind the Iron Curtain to Moscow on the train, was it went through Poland. Poland had just liberated itself and was just experiencing freedom. So I get off at Warsaw at the major stop there. And I'm walking around with another guardian, well, actually a few guardian angels who were with me from what was then East Germany.
So they spoke
Russian.
What year was that?
1994.
Wow.
This is when Perestroika, Glasnost had taken place. Gorbachev with the Weinstein and Raisina, his wife, were pushed to the side. And the drunk was in charge, Yeltsin. there was all chaos in Russia, so I had been invited there. So we take the train across. We get off at the main station in Warsaw, and we go to Mickey D's. And at that time, the currency hadn't adjusted. So I ordered a burger, and it was like 10,894 shlotys. And I said, you got to be kidding. I said, how about American dollars? Yeah, we'll take whatever you got.
Right.
Back then, it was sort of like, yeah, we'll take American dollars. And I said to myself, how many Polish currency shlotys? 10,892 shlotys. All right, okay, figure it out. I give you a dollar. Well, that's good enough. That's about equal to 10,842 shlotys. But we talk Mickey D's. We talk about the interview you had with a former campaign manager of Donald Trump, the candidate at the time, Corey Lewandowski. And he was talking about Mickey D's, how the president likes to pack it away. Obviously, it has a lot to do with the physical that we were given details of by the doctor at the Walter Reed Army Hospital Center yesterday. So was Corey talking to you about the insatiable appetite that our president has for Mickey D's?
He was. And listen, he didn't hold back that the president absolutely loves McDonald's. The one thing, he takes the bun off, which is, of course, a bit healthier, less carbs.
He does?
He takes the bun off. I know. That's the thing. He eats the burgers.
This is like eating pizza like he did, remember, with a knife and a fork with Sarah Palin in Times Square, who was eating it the right way.
Well, that's why it's trying to look a little bit like, okay, I'm trying to look a little refined, but I love those burgers.
I didn't know he took the bun off.
Yeah, he takes the bun off. Isn't that interesting? And Corey is testifying today, and that's the big news, too. And he broke that with me when I was on the show the other day where I interviewed him. And I asked him, I said, listen, you know, are you going to pull a Steve Bannon? Because we heard that yesterday Steve Bannon came out and he basically claimed executive privilege, saying, I'm not going to talk. I know nothing, like Sergeant Schultz.
Yes.
But Corey Lewandowski, who is right now behind closed doors, this is what he had to say to me.
I have nothing to hide. I didn't collude or cooperate or coordinate with any Russian agency, Russian government, or anybody else to try and impact this election. So they asked me to come in. I said I would. I'll be happy to come out and set the record straight about my lack of involvement with any type of foreign entity.
Little too brazen. Now, I'm assuming he is testifying before the House or the Senate committee, right?
House Intel Committee, right. Just the House, which is where Bannon was yesterday.
Right, not sitting with Mueller and his aide-de-camps.
Right, not yet. And in fact, what was interesting, Curtis, I asked him, I said, have you heard from Mueller yet? And he has not heard from Mueller yet. And I thought that was interesting,
well,
based on where things are headed.
Corey has a little bit too much bravado. You can see he's never been through this before. I have, in different capacities, not up on the Hill.
Right.
Not by a U.S. attorney who's a special prosecutor, but rather in criminal court actions. And when the U.S. attorneys ask you questions, they already know the answer.
Yeah, and listen, you got to remember the partisan climate that we're in, too. You sit there and it's like night and day. You hear Adam Schiff's view of what happened behind the room, and then you hear the Republicans' view of what happens behind the room. So he's got folks who are clearly out to get him. But he says to me he has nothing to hide. He said, bring it on. He doesn't mind. And he said, I hope that this helps bring it to a conclusion. And look, I hope everybody who testifies says what they know, because, you know, then we can get this to a conclusion and we'll see where it goes.
Well, let's go to James first up in the queue, calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Jimmy?
Good afternoon. My only comment about Trump, other than the fact that the guy's an abject liar, is that if you look at the numbers that he's presented, you can prove it. Obama's 6'1" and Jeb Bush is 6'3". The guy's been photographed from probably...
No. Wait a second. Jeb Bush, Bush 43, is not 6'3".
No. Jeb Bush, the brother, not...
Oh, okay. My mistake. Okay.
The other thing is, and I'm trying to use, you know, people who... people could Google and just see them standing on the stage.
But wait, but what's your point, James? That there's a lie in the height?
The guy's a liar. Forget about the height. He's supposed to be 6'3" and 239 pounds. If you look at Carey Price, who's the goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens, professional NHL hockey player, he's 6'3", 218.
So wait a second, James. James, hold on a second. You know what you're saying? You're basically saying that this doctor, who was brought in, by the way, by Bush, and who was Obama's personal doctor, and a guy who was a trauma surgeon in Iraq, one of the most esteemed doctors, who is nonpartisan, you're saying he's basically a liar.
Are you sure?
Because this is from him. This is not Trump saying.
I know, but
you know?
Rita Cosby, he's not a Russian doctor, because he put the president 1 pound shy of being obese at 6'3", 239.
Maybe he cheated on the pound.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But still, come on. You know,
We're going to get into the president's health and, more importantly, how he actually asked for a cognitive test.
Yeah, and that was interesting. And according to this doctor, he said it was a perfect bill of health. I can't wait to play the comments, because the press, I've never seen a doctor grilled so much.
I know that part of a cognitive test is that Rorschach test where they show you items. So apparently this doctor...
By the way, can I say one thing? Yes. I would love to see you get a Rorschach test. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
Can I administer
incorrect.
It? I would love to administer it to you. Okay.
And it would be psychosexual, too, because all these images, I would see sexually connotated images, and you would say, what the hell are you talking about?
I would say, he needs help.
But Dr. Ronnie Jackson apparently did a Rorschach test as part of the cognitive test of the president, opened up a picture. It was a picture of a Haitian... in Port-au-Prince, and the president said, bad.
And then there's a picture of a Norwegian with a flag.
A Viking, a Norseman from Valhalla. And he said, oh, Norwegian, good.
Now, what about when he showed him the picture of the Pole holding the visa? What did he say on that one?
He said, huh? because, again, he's very forgetful at times. He hasn't been with the Poles in a long time. So it's the last people who've been with him.
Yeah, it's the last person
have the most influence.
In the room.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77-WABC.
Calming me down. Electronic dance music. It's not a Polish poker, that's for sure. But Rita Cosby in the house. Let's go to the phones and to Giuseppe, Joey, who is out in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Giuseppe.
Hey, Joe.
How are you? Listen, I'm getting frustrated because all this nonsense, the attacks on the president. Do you guys understand, Curtis? I'm surprised. You don't think that more than half the people in this country have a resentment for the money and the resources spent on illegal aliens? And do you think that less than half the people in this country want to know why Africa, El Salvador, here, there, everywhere? What happened to the rest of the world? After 1965, all we're getting is people of color. The majority of immigrants are people of color.
And Joe, Joe, you're getting into it's a black white thing. Your point, I thought at the beginning, was a good one, where you say that, you know, yeah, we are spending a heck of a lot of money on refugees. I mean, and I think a lot of people have a problem with that.
They come here temporarily, and then we're humped for making them go back to where they came from.
All right, well, if in fact that's the case, because there's a raging debate about that, depending on what point of view you have, we do need manual laborers, most of whom are going to come not from European countries. They're going to come from third world, poor and impoverished countries. We should have contracted labor. And we do some of that already. Like, for instance, after the hurricane in Houston, many of the buildings of the major oil companies were flooded out, and with it, horrible toxins and chemicals were spilled everywhere. So they brought in hazmat crews.
Well, and you talked about also Superstorm Sandy, too, in our backyard.
But they brought in a lot of hazmat crews from the DR, Dominican Republic. These are not people who were seeking to stay here, although I'm sure some are going to sort of slip through the cracks while they're here. But the idea was they were here for 6 months, put on a hazmat suit each day, go into the buildings, detox the buildings so the buildings can be put back into operation.
But then they go back
to the DR.
But your point is to do it, that they were doing it because these are jobs that Americans
H-1B visa. We bring in Indians who are high-tech guys and bring them to Silicon Valley. Some of them will eventually stay. But most of them are here for contracted work, and then they go back.
Well, that is Trump's point, and that's what Kristian Nielsen, the Norwegian Democrat, was trying to present, too, was that it is a merit-based system, and the folks who have the high skills can come whether it's temporary or longer.
Yeah, but what about if they have the high skills like Norwegians who are used to not working hard, having three work days a week, live in a socialized country in which they're cared for from the cradle to the grave, and they don't want to come here.
Right. They don't want to come here.
They're not knocking down the doors.
But then you know what? Then you bring in people who really do want to come here and people who can contribute to this country.
Or bring in people who can help. Many of the original Norwegians settled in the Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin. They were farmers.
Big time.
You think any of these Norwegians coming over want to do field work any longer?
Poles will do it. Poles are hardworking, honest, great people.
But you're not going to find Norwegians doing that kind of work. Come on, let's get real. But
bring in more Norwegians. And polls, more importantly.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
When I'm going to the movies, I take up 7 rows because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on. Really, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. You know it's really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on. Really, really you fat. Know
and it is 39 minutes after the hour here on 77 WABC, high atop Madison Square Garden at the NJDiet.com studios. And, you know, I love, you know, they called it the birther movement. Now they're calling it, Curtis, the girther movement, because I have never seen a White House doctor so grilled. Here is this guy. Usually, you know, I've been at the White House where they've released, you know, the medical exams. It's typical. You do these annual exams. And usually it's, you know, like a two-paragraph statement. Here it is. He's got high cholesterol, high blood pressure.
My concern, Rita, was when Barack Obama was going through the battery of tests that they might detect lung cancer. Because we know at one point he was a degenerate cigarette smoker. His wife, Michelle, threatened to wrap her 24-inch pythons around his neck and squeeze the living daylights out of him.
And by the way, he was caught a couple times sort of puffing. Remember, the press would say he's puffing in the corner.
That was my concern. Now, with our president now, Trump, we know he has boundless energy. He sleeps, what, 4 or 5 hours a night, even if.
If, yes.
Nobody doubts that. He doesn't like exercise. We know that. He doesn't like walking. If he doesn't have to, he'll take a golf cart. But to me, even though he's a big boy, he looks like he's in relatively good health. And in fact, that was the observation of the Walter Reed Army Hospital doctor who supervised his medical and cognitive tests, Dr. Ronnie Jackson.
Age 71 years and 7 months at the time of the exam, height 75 inches, weight 239 pounds, resting heart rate 68, blood pressure 122 over 74, pulse oximetry, 99% on room air. Temperature was 98.4.
And then a reporter asked the doc, he says, hey, how could the president be in such tip-top shape when the guy's constantly eating cheeseburgers?
Explain to me how a guy who eats McDonald's and fried chicks and all those Diet Cokes and who never exercises is in as good a shape as you say he's in.
It's called genetics. I don't know. It's some people have, you know, just great genes. You know, I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know.
There's no doubt. Some people, they have those genetics. They can appear to be overweight, and yet they can handle the fat on their rack where someone else would have enormous problems.
But also, you got to remember, in the middle of all this, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink. So that certainly has helped his longevity, no question.
And then the doctor commented on the president's exercise routine.
Dr. Jackson, does the president do anything at all right now in terms of exercise? What is his daily exercise routine, if there is one?
So I would say right now on a day-to-day basis, he doesn't have a dedicated, defined exercise program. And so that, you know, that's what I'm working on. The good part is that, you know, we can build on that pretty easily.
Now, it's true he doesn't walk the links when he plays golf, but in his first year in the White House, he has now played more golf in his first year than Barack Obama did at taxpayers' expense. So we know he's hooking to the right. He's hooking. He's slicing to the right. He's in the sand traps. He gets some exercise that way.
He has boundless energy. Look, think about all the exercise his fingers are using when he's tweeting.
Now, last night I was listening to Mark Levin, who was clearly running interference for former President Ronald Reagan, who he served, I think, as the chief of staff for his attorney general. About Alzheimer's dementia. And in fact, Dr. Ronnie Jackson was asked about that because some have alluded to the fact that, hey, Trump's father ended up with Alzheimer's.
Which a lot of people who are older do, sadly.
Man, let's face it, Trump is almost 72. What about the possibility that he's showing the first signs of either dementia or Alzheimer's?
This screens for any type of cognitive issues, you know, Alzheimer's and all those other things. And so, you know, the fact that the president got, you know, 30 out of 30 on that exam, I think that, you know, there's no indication whatsoever that he has any cognitive issues.
All right, no cognitive issues. We'll get to that in a second. But then all of a sudden, a guy who had gotten thrown out of the West Wing of the White House while the president was sitting down with the dictator of Kazakhstan.
Yep, Kazakhstan. Yeah.
I call it Kazakhstan.
Yeah, like
all
Borat.
All the Buharians who came here, like Borat, if you remember.
Yeah, Borat.
Remember the name of his movie that right now would probably not cut mustard with the Me Too movement?
Oh my gosh, can you imagine if it's... By the way, that is one of my favorite movies. I love Borat. I mean, he's hysterical, but you're right. It would be the most outrageous. Imagine if it aired now. It would be interesting to see the reception in the public.
I'm trying to remember the name of
it.
It
was
movie.
So politically incorrect. He had a couple
like
of them. He had a couple of them.
52 words attached. Anyway,
I'll find it.
We'll get
it
to that
you.
Momentarily.
I'll think of it. I'll think of it.
But the point being is he's sitting there with the dictator of Kazakhstan, and he throws Acosta out. He says, that's it, out, out, out. But then Jim Acosta asks Ronnie Jackson, the doctor, about the cognitive test.
Just to make sure we're clear on this, when you analyze his cognitive ability or neurological functions, that is not the same thing as a psychiatric exam or a psychological exam.
It is not. No, it's a screening assessment for cognitive impairment.
Now, that was a pretty doggone good question, because a lot of people would have thought, oh, that's a shrink test. You know, that's a psych test. And it is not at all a test. In fact, it's interesting, the one that they administer, the doctor at the Walter Reed Army Hospital has administered.
And by the way, it's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Test. And he said that Trump got 30 out of 30, and that is good for age 71. He said there's not, you know, he was quite impressed by it.
Well, first off, wait a second, Rita Cosby. It's called the what test?
It's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Test. And by the way, I talked to a doctor this morning. He said that this is a known test. It's a reputable test. And he did say that 30 out of 30 is a good number. That is quite good. It's not like it's automatic you're going to get 30 out of 30.
Now, I take issue with that because anyone who's been to Montreal know that the Quebecois, the frogs there, will not speak English. So if it was a Montreal test, it would have had to have been given in French.
Ah, oui, oui.
I know our president does not speak French at all.
That's why he passed it so well, because maybe the doctor doesn't speak French either.
So he could pass with flying colors. Anyway, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of exactly what is in this cognitive test. But first, let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is Danny, who I believe is calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Danny.
Hi, Danny.
Good afternoon. You know, I was on the treadmill trying to keep myself alive as long as the president yesterday when I actually watched this entire press conference. And one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen in my life, where the media are questioning a trained veteran surgeon, trauma surgeon, and asking him questions that they don't even know what they're asking. So, I give the man credit for standing there and listening to this because it was the stupidest questions I've ever heard. Well, does that mean he's not going to have mental decline eventually? Well, everyone, you know, they're just anything. They're impugning his reputation, and so are you, Curtis, by saying he's lying on the test. Anything to
but
get
come
at
on.
The president.
You're 1 pound under the standard for being obese at the size of 6'3". Why wouldn't you think
Curtis,
they might have just fudged it?
Listen, Barack Obama was a very in-shape young guy. Smoked like a fiend. Was the media all over him? No, matter of fact, they didn't even show pictures of him smoking.
Well, you know what? You hit it on the head. I think the media, and I was just saying this, Danny, too. I've been in the room where we've gotten these, you know, medical exams. You know, I was senior correspondent for Fox in Washington. And so they handed it, be like, oh, one paragraph. And you go, okay, there it is. Move on to the next story. I have never seen the press with such a premise. They almost, their jaws dropped, Curtis. They couldn't believe. Wait, he's sane? What do you mean? He's cognitive?
I'll give you an example, Danny. They had, as part of this Montreal cognitive assessment, they had what they call the memory and mental tasks. And so they would ask about five words that you would normally use. And apparently the president told Dr. Ronnie Jackson, fake news, fake news, fake news. And so naturally Ronnie Jackson said, absolutely, we've heard you say that over and over. And then there's the repetition drill, in which he wants to find out what is a word that you commonly use. And the president said, no collusion with the Russians, no collusion with the Russians, no collusions with the Russians. And that's how he aced this test and got 30 out of 30 in the cognitive test.
And let me harken back about 30 years of my life. When I was a young foot cop in Manhattan, they sent me over to see ex-President Reagan was giving a speech at the Yale Club or the Harvard Club.
Yes.
And this has been after he wasn't no longer president, and there had been rumors of this decline, and we had all seen him get old. So I sauntered into this room, and I watched this man give a 35 to 40-minute speech without cue cards, without a teleprompter, business, Russian-American business communities. And then he took questions from the crowd and was responding in numbers, numerals, dates, and as sharp as the president.
I remember being a financial expert. And look, Danny, there's no doubt at times Ronald Reagan was very cognitive. But to Trump's credit, the doctor, Dr. Ronnie Johnson, said, I don't think I'm going to give you the cognitive test. Actually, no president has ever submitted for a cognitive test.
And Trump wanted it.
Let's go the whole nine yards. I'll take the whole test.
Now, were you surprised, Curtis, that he passed with flying colors, according to the doctor?
Yeah, because part of it is the ability to pay attention. They assess that, and we know this president has attention deficit disorder.
Actually, I disagree, because I think, and clearly he does have attention deficit disorder, but what's interesting about this president, he kind of laser focuses, so if it's a short test, he would ace it, because it's, okay, here's a quick question, answer that, quick question, answer that. It's perfect for Donald Trump. It wasn't like handing in a 5,000-word essay, then I think he would
fail. Oh, you
mean
flashcards. He's cool with the flashcards.
Here you go. One word association. Win.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Minutes after the hour one, great Led Zeppelin song, Rita Cosby.
I love that we're rocking out.
The immigrant song in which they're specifying the Norsemen, the Vikings from Valhalla, getting back into their longboats and sailing from the Scandinavian countries, Norway, coming to the New World. As the squareheads, the Norwegians, believe through Eric the Red and Leif Erikson, as they have a parade every year up Third Avenue in Bay Ridge, claiming they discovered the New World, not Christopher Columbus or the Italians believe, or the Irish who think it's St. Brendan the Navigator. And as we're high atop Madison Square Garden in the great facilities provided to this broadcast by NJDiet.com, the president's allies cannot drop this Norway connection of his.
Yeah, they're seated in their sleeve. And yesterday, oh my God, that was one of the wildest hearings. It was, I was waiting for Kirstjen Nielsen, of course, the new Department of Homeland Security Secretary. I was waiting for her, because they kept saying, okay, well, what was said in the meeting? And I was waiting for her to say, well, he said S-hole, and he said F-hole, and he said, and we didn't get there, but we got somewhere else.
We'll play Cory Booker, the drama queen, later on, as she started crying and saying, you must be suffering amnesia. That was a main part of her inquisition. But then, of all people, Patrick Leahy, who I think with the retirement of Orrin Hatch is the oldest guy in the U.S. Senate. I thought he was dead. I thought he was a cadaver in formaldehyde.
You want to give him the Montreal cognitive test,
exactly,
is what you're saying.
But Patrick Leahy asked the new Homeland Security czarina, Kirstjen Nielsen.
Kirstjen.
Boy, that sounds real Norwegian to me. Simple question is that, well, in fact, listen to Leahy's question and her really dumb answer.
Norway is a predominantly white country, isn't it?
I actually do not know that, sir, but I imagine that is the case.
Okay.
She does not know that, although, obviously, if you look at her last name, Nielsen, you look at her first name, she has Norwegian in her background. People walking in the streets, not highly educated. You ask them one thing about Norway, say, oh, yeah, a lot of white people, blonde hair, blue-eyed, white people who love reindeer. And they're up there in Scandinavia, right?
Yes, and they look a little bit like your co-host today, you know, who is half Norwegian and Danish. My other half is proud Polish, and I'm proud of my Norwegian and Danish, too, believe me.
But
what is she supposed to say, Curtis? She's sitting there. She knows where they're going. I mean, clearly, you know, you get briefed so much before you go into the hearings, and you know that they probably spent 90% of their time saying,
know,
how do you dance around this? What do you say?
I know, but
yes, yes,
Rita,
they're white as, you know, white as snow. What do you say?
What is she, geographically challenged? But then all of a sudden, the question gets around to the defense of her president, obviously, who appointed her to the position, because he was saying, well, how come we don't have people coming here from Norway?
What he was saying was he was using Norway as an example of a country that is, what he was specifically referring to is the prime minister telling him that the people of Norway work very hard. And so what he was referencing is, from a merit-based perspective, we'd like to have those with skills who can assimilate and contribute to the United States, moving away from country quotas and to an individual merit-based system.
First off, Norwegians used to work hard, like a lot of Americans.
You're saying they sit around and eat cheese and have, you know,
Rita,
some Norwegian vodka and some other. It's called
like,
aquavit. That's
like,
basically the
Danish like Australians report. Are. They work a three-day work week. It's a socialist country.
Well, it's cold. You got to stay inside most
all
of the time.
All their needs,
you know,
are taken care of from the cradle to the grave. Unless they happen to be loggers, which is very dangerous work, or commercial fishermen. Again, very dangerous work.
Which is the reason why it's so interesting, Curtis, that he used that example. And we were talking earlier, whereas Poland is such a hardworking, industrious country. And there are some hardworking Norwegians. I don't want to say there aren't. But
not in the new generation.
The Poles are diehards. They are such diehard fighters. I think what it comes down to is the president, it's sort of the last person in the room. And that's sort of the syndrome, the Donald Trump syndrome. I don't think he meant it as a, well, look at Lily White, you know, Norway. I think he meant it as they just walked out. If it was a different prime minister who walked out, he would have called that.
All right. Let's assume that that's true. But why do his apparatchiks have to add insult to injury, like the Department of Homeland Security, Czarina, who didn't know that Norway was predominantly white?
Now, do you believe she didn't know? She just knew that question was coming.
No,
come on.
No,
she was dancing.
Know. She's a stunad. And then you have...
How is she a stunad?
She's dumb.
She's not a dumbo. She got all the way to that position.
I would have asked, I would have asked her, okay, give me the analytics. And if you need some time during the break, please get it from your aide-de-camps.
And by the way, that's a great question.
How many Norwegians have snuck into our country, have been caught by L'Immigra, and how many have overstayed their visa? And I think you will find very few. But
you know where that is? That you hit a great point. And where that should have gone is that's the mistake of the senators, because every single one of them knew that that was the question everybody was looking for. That was the question she was being briefed on by the folks who prepare before she goes in the room. And they could have thrown a whole bunch of other different questions at her to get
the reason
to say,
that,
go back and do research.
The reason that's important is most people don't come here illegally by crossing the border. They come on a visa and they overstay. You know, we never really discussed that. The wall would do nothing to stop them. But let's go to U.S. Senator Joni Ernst in the heartland of America, Iowa, which is a split state. You got a lot of liberals and progressives, one of the first state to ratify gay marriage, but hardcore conservatives who were elected in the primary for
the caucus,
the Republican, for the Republican race, Ted Cruz and his Holy Roller father over Donald Trump. So Joni was trying to defend what the president had said about Norwegians at a community meeting.
He is standing up for a lot of the countries that where we have seen.
Name a few. Could you name a few?
Yeah, you bet. Norway, is one of them. No, well, okay, how many of you think, you know, you laugh, but folks, who borders Norway? Russia.
What is she, Sarah Palin?
Well, that was the first thing I thought about is I can see Russia from my rearview window. Come on.
So what? Norway does its northernmost border because it hooks around. First, you got Finland closest, then Sweden, then Norway.
But it's not like we talk about a missile defense shield sitting there to protect us from Russia sitting there in Norway. Come on.
So here we have all these defenses of the president's use of the rationale of why we want people coming here from Norway instead of... Just drop it. Leave it be. Because the president apparently tried to make up for that.
I want him to come in from everywhere. Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay, so the president is now saying he wants them to come in from everywhere. Ah, I don't know if I want them coming in from North Korea. Those clones, those zombies of the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea. But I'd much prefer to have that discussion than just trying to solicit people to come here who don't want to be here. Now, interesting. Dick Durbin, who is one of the inquisitors of the Czarina of Homeland Security, along with Lindsey Graham, oh boy, imagine.
Who, by the way, is not golfing with the president, I think, in the near future.
He basically said, oh, I want to go back to golfing with the president and having a good time
with him. By the way, that was the wildest thing to hear him actually, you know, I mean, you know that's what he thought privately, but to basically say that was pretty incredible because they've certainly been at odds, but to say, oh, I want to go back on the links.
Well, in fact, let's hear Lindsey Graham. Remember, he used to get pimp slapped by the president in the Republican primary, made fun of, in fact, Donald Trump, the candidate, even gave out his cell phone number, along with Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Lying Ted Cruz, right?
To the world, and then he threw the phone.
Right.
Remember that whole thing?
All three of them. And then all of a sudden, he's become Donald Trump's caddy out there in the links. He loves Trump. Trump loves him. And listen to how Lindsey Graham was moaning and groaning about his losing his golf buddy.
Tuesday, we had a president that I was proud to golf with. Call my friend who understood immigration had to be bipartisan. You had to have border security. It's essential you have border security with a wall, but he also understood the idea that we had to do it with compassion. Now, I don't know where that guy went. I want him back.
I want him back.
Come back to the game with me. I really love the Trump golf course.
I want Trump back, who invites me to Mar-a-Lago.
By the way, what did Lindsey Graham expect after he came out so publicly against the president? You know, I mean, we've seen it. You saw it in the Republican primary. We see it in the presidency, which is why Joni Ernst and some of these others are saying, hey, Norway, look at Norway. What a great country it is. They're all worried about their positioning.
We do realize in our school systems, they're not teaching geography and history like they used to. And I'm older than Ernst, and I'm certainly older than the Czarina of the Homeland Security. But I think they are two perfect examples of why we have to teach more about geography and world history.
Well, I think in the case of Kirstjen, you know, Nielsen, she worked for John Kelly. That's how the whole thing came about. She was John Kelly's sort of right-hand person for a long time. I think she's, and I think Joni, too. I've met Senator Ernst. But I think, clearly, they are just trying to be politically dancing and trying to figure out how to get through this process. Talk about, of all times, to have a Homeland Security hearing right after, you know, saying, come, you know, bring more Norwegians in. It's a nightmare for
her. Well, let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is Sam calling from the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Sammy.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Curtis. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, wish the best for your recovery. Glad to hear your voice again on the radio.
Well, thank you.
And my comment is this. Nobody's going to move from Norway or Europe to this country anymore because most of the countries in Europe are socialists. They have a free health insurance. Their GDP is higher than us. Their cost of living is less than us. You can go and buy an orange juice up there for less than the cost that we have based upon euro exchange. So why would somebody want to come from Europe? And one thing the Americans are forgetting in this country, who's going to pick up our tomatoes and lettuce? Have you bought these days in groceries?
Wait, Sammy, let me ask you, where are you from, too? Where are you from?
I am from originally from Middle East. And I'm going to tell you something. If you guys are going to keep pushing this nonsense that you want to block the doors, the cost of living is going to go up, 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 up in this country. We need a workforce to pick up. That is in Germany, my favorite leader in this world. She was smart. She let the Syrian in. Because she knows her population is getting old.
Sam, I hear your passion. And listen, I agree with you. And listen, like you said, no one from Norway is coming here. I mean, that's the issue. And you know, the point
Well, the
that
other
she,
thing, he brings up Angela Merkel of Germany, who obviously has caught grief for letting so many immigrants in illegally without a vetting process, just come running through Europe, whether through Turkey, Greece first, and then just making a beeline to Germany where they think the streets are paved with gold. But she's never explained that the reason she wanted it is that the birth rate in Germany has plummeted. They have this huge industrial complex. It used to be the Turks who were on the assembly line. They haven't even been granted citizenship, even though they're like third generation. But third generation Turks, they don't want to work the assembly line anymore. So making the Benzes, the Beamers, the Bayer Aspirins, all the industrial products that the Germans are so proud of and they make so well. So they need cheap labor. So that million strong that bum rushed into their country that they didn't even bother to vet out, They're already working in some of these industrial complexes at minimum wage. Now, minimum wage in Germany is pretty damn good.
I was just about to say,
but no German, no German and no Turk is going to work for minimum wage any longer in Angela Merkel's Germany. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
This idea that the commander-in-chief of this country could, with broad brushes, talk about certain nations and thus cast a shadow over the millions of Americans who are from those communities, and that you could even say in your testimony the Norwegians were preferenced by him because they're so hardworking. Let me finish.
Happy to.
When ignorance and bigotry is allied with power, it is a dangerous force in our country. Your silence and your amnesia is complicity. I hurt. When Dick Durbin called me, I had tears of rage when I heard about his experience in that meeting. And for you not to feel that hurt and that pain, and to dismiss some of the questions of my colleagues, saying I've already answered that line of questions, when tens of millions of Americans are hurting right now because of what they're worried about, what happened in the White House. That's unacceptable to me. There are threats in this country. People plotting. I receive enough death threats to know the reality.
What a drama queen, Cory Booker.
And I am running for president in 2020, and this is my announcement.
What a drama queen. when I spoke to Dick Durbin, my colleague, there were tears pouring from my eyes. Get out of here.
How rehearsed did that sound, by the way? It was like, it's been interesting, because I've been watching Cory Booker, waiting for him to sort of make some big statement. He hasn't made too much on so many of the other big issues that we've seen of late, and he's a pretty boisterous guy. I've always thought this is a guy who's going to run for president or maybe VP or some sort of position, I think a bigger position, and here was his moment. Well, here was the script.
You know, Cory recently came out for national law that would legalize recreational use of marijuana. After that performance yesterday, he needs to sit back, hit the bong, and just chill out. What was that drama queen thing? You think he'll be given a nomination for the upcoming Oscars for that?
I think so. I think he deserves it. Let's go to the callers. Let's go to Donna from Long Island. You're here with Rita and Curtis on 77 WABC. Go ahead.
Hi, Rita. Hi, Curtis. How are you guys doing today?
We're good. What do you think about drama queen Cory Booker?
Well, I don't really care. I wanted to just say, first it was Russia, Russia, Russia. Now it's Norway, Norway, Norway.
Yeah, that's true. Listen, at least, as you said, it's a distraction from Russia. That's the good news for the president, Curtis. At least it takes him off that message, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what else is it going to be?
Well, now hold on a second. Donna.
Are coming up.
Wait a second. You mentioned the connection between Norway and Russia.
Are you bringing in Sarah Palin again?
Well, no. Well, yeah. Let's go to Senator Ernst of Iowa. She made the connection. I didn't.
He is standing up for a lot of the countries that where we have seen.
Name a few. Could you name a few?
Yeah, you bet. Norway, is one of them. You know, you laugh, but folks, who borders Norway? Russia.
Ah!
That is what you call a Hail Mary stretch.
What a Fulbright scholar she is. Anyway, let's go to Michael calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Mikey.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Rita and Curtis? Curtis, I just wanted to wish you a speedy recovery. You're a legend in New York, and, you know, we all love you. And I wanted to preface by saying that because, right, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, and I think that you mentioned the words do not. You know, I think sometimes you have a little stunato in you only because you allow the minutiae of the words that come out of the media and the president, although we already know he's not a rocket scientist in literacy. I think that we know that. We voted for him. We didn't want another soft-spoken liar like we had with Obama. All we wanted was someone to drain the swamp. And, you know, if I took every single word that you said on the radio and made a montage, I could easily paint the picture of you as a crazy, racist, you know, fat-shaming fool. But, you know, everyone knows that's not true.
Wow, and, Curtis, you know, there's a lot in there, Curtis.
Michael, wow, we're talking Michael. Norway here. Why did he bring that up? He's wrong on that, isn't he, Michael?
I don't know. I think that he
what do you mean you
came
don't
out
know?
With the last, well, the last thing that was on his mind, like Rita was talking about, you know, the last meeting he had, you know.
Yeah, okay. All right. I get that. Now, no, wait a second, Michael. I get that. And then all of a sudden your staff floods you with information and say Norwegians are not coming here. They don't want to come here. They haven't snuck across the border. They haven't overstayed visas. There's nobody from Norway who wants to come here, Mr. President. Why did you use that as a comparison?
That's damage control by a bunch of other, there are other idiots in there that are giving the wrong response.
Well, and the problem is, Michael, too, they can't, the way it works, too, you know that the president's like, okay, listen, I can't backtrack on this. You know, he's got too much pride to backtrack on it. So they're all trying to figure out, okay, go out with this message and go out with this straight face.
He looks like more of an idiot each day it continues on. And then his surrogates come to the forefront, like his czarina of Homeland Security that doesn't even know most Norwegians are white, even though she's part Norwegian herself.
She knows.
Is she not a Dumkopf?
She knows. She's
Jody Ernst,
the water.
Jody Ernst, is, of course Norway's important. It's next to Russia.
You know what? I can't wait to see Curtis like on the campaign trail. You know that they're going to be asking. You know almost every person who's going to be defending that message is going to have to try to come up with a Journey Ernst-like response. You're right.
Here's
I know.
A president who can never acknowledge when he's wrong.
Well, remember, it was the big crowd at the inauguration. It was the biggest crowd ever. And he said, Sean Spicer, get out there.
You know,
defend it.
Like a pretentious a-hole when you do that, when you can't acknowledge that, yes,
well,
Mr.
what
President,
he should do is backtrack.
You were wrong.
He should say, listen, maybe that wasn't the best example. A better one is X. I agree with you. He needs the Curtis Sliwa School of Communication.
What did he do? This is what he said. He not only backtracked, he all of a sudden decided that he wants peace, love, and happiness. He wants everybody to come into America, which contradicts exactly what he has said before.
I want them to come in from everywhere, everywhere. Thank you very much, everybody.
What else is he going to say? Now he's hoping that there'll be another controversy and this will move Norway off the radar. That's what he's hoping.
Every 48 hours, he contradicts himself.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
It must be like Putin.
And his president can never escape the plume hanging over his administration of what, if any, contacts did his minions have with Russians during the Republican primary, the general election, and even before the inauguration of about a year ago. Well, you mentioned how in your interview, Rita Cosby, with Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager, that he is willingly come forward to testify up on the Hill about that.
Yeah, in fact, he said, listen, I don't even know if I've ever talked to a Russian, and I'm ready to do it. In fact, he's testifying behind closed doors right now. Here's a little bit of what he said in that interview with me. And Corey was talking basically about saying that, you know, I feel fine. I'm going to bring it all out there. I'm going to say it all out there. I have nothing to hide. And it's a different strategy than Steve Bannon yesterday, who didn't say anything.
I have nothing to hide. I didn't collude or cooperate or coordinate with any Russian agency, Russian government, or anybody else to try and impact this election. So they asked me to come in. I said I would. I'll be happy to come out and set the record straight about my lack of involvement with any type of foreign entity.
Okay, he's meeting on the Hill, but we see that Bannon is going to have a sit-down with Mueller and his aide-de-camps.
And he was subpoenaed, too.
And that's the biggie.
That's the biggie. First person in the inner circle, too, of the Trump inner circle, to be subpoenaed. And we've heard mixed messages. I mean, one of the things that Mueller's, you know, that we've been hearing through the media, basically, is that Mueller's team couldn't reach him. Right? I mean, it seems a little hard. The House Intel Committee was able to reach him. But the House Intel Committee was furious at Steve Bannon because they said yesterday, behind closed doors, he kept, you know, saying executive privilege, kept instituting executive privilege, saying, I can't answer that question because the White House won't let me.
But let me ask you this, because with, again, the Russian plume hanging over the Trump administration, the president about 2 weeks ago teased all of us and said, hey, I'm announcing my fake news awards. You know, the way, obviously, you had the Golden Globes.
Just like the Oscars.
The fake news awards. That was postponed. than I thought it was going to take place today.
Yeah, we've been all waiting for it. It's kind of interesting because I was hearing on some of the media this morning that it may happen today, it may happen tomorrow, and even White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders seems a little in the dark if it's going to happen or not going to happen. And for a guy who's a showman, where's the big show so far? We're all kind of waiting. I mean, you can bet we can think of who's going to be on the list. I don't think it's going to be too hard.
I think Sarah Sanders, Huckleberry, was too busy as the presidential spokesperson fending off all the accusations that the president is racist. In fact, I guess she ran out of reasons that he's not, because this one really struck me as strange.
It is leverage. He said last night, Mr. President, show you're not a racist, cut a deal on that.
Look, I think that is an outrageous claim. And frankly, I think if the critics of the president were who he said he was, why did NBC give him a show for a decade on TV?
If Sarah understood, I mean, a lot of racists on TV with shows.
But she has an interesting point, and here it is, Curtis, because she has the point that he was fine when he was on NBC and making them money, and he wasn't president, and now NBC is continuously asking him difficult questions, and I think being tougher on him than they were on Barack Obama.
Well, that's because he was a Democrat, liberal, and progressive during most of those years. But
that's the point. That's the point. So her point is an interesting
one. You're not sure if he's actually going to announce these fake news awards, but outgoing U.S. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, when he heard that, said, well, I'm taking to the floor of the Senate, and I'm going to compare this president, Donald Trump, and his many attacks on the media to what Joe Stalin, that's right, Uncle Joe Stalin did at the height of the Soviet Union's power when he cracked down on any critics and any free press.
It was a year in which an unrelenting daily assault on the constitutionally protected free speech was launched by the same White House. An assault that is as unprecedented as it is unwarranted. The enemy of the people was how the President of the United States called the free press in 2017. Mr. President, it is a testament to the condition of our democracy that our own president uses words infamously spoken by Joseph Stalin to describe his enemies.
That is so outrageous.
Well, let's juxtaposition. Because Flake said this, I'm as repulsed by that as you are, but here is the president. He's known to be very repetitive, and here he is talking about some of his favorite words, labeling, well, did he ever label you part of the fake news industry, Rita, for your many broadcasts and reports?
I haven't been told, at least not to my face.
Okay, well, here's the president. We've put together a little bit of a collage.
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
Don't we love that term, fake? What we've learned about fake over the last little while. CNN, fake. Fake news.
You've been hearing about with the fake news and all of that.
I'm changing it from fake news, though.
Doesn't that undermine...
Very fake news.
I know. And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are.
Okay. Now, yesterday in the West Wing, we described how the dictator of Kazakhstan was there, an ally of us, discussing policy with the president.
A friend of Borat's.
And let's face it, a guy who knew Joe Stalin well. He was weaned on Joe Stalin. The president took umbrage to Acosta of CNN and other reporters badgering away, asking questions. And then he decided...
Mr. President, did you say that you want more people to come in from Norway? Did you say that you wanted more people to come in from
much.
Norway? Is that true, Mr.
Thank
President?
Thank you very much. I want them to come in from everywhere. Thank you very much, everybody.
Just Caucasian or white countries, sir? Or do you want people to come in from other parts of the world where there are people of color?
Thank you. Jim, thank you.
So basically it was out, 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 and everybody was ushered out. Now, let's play the real Joe Stalin, because... If you've watched the History Channel, which was the Hitler Channel, they would always juxtaposition it with the other killer of that century, which was Joe Stalin. Let's compare Joe Stalin, as Flake wants to do, to our President Donald Trump.
То это была поддержка. Поддержка прежде всего в борьбе своего народа за мир, а потом и поддержка Советского Союза.
Do you need me to translate?
If you could, please.
Yeah, that means that I love Donald Trump. Yes. I hope he becomes president, and we'll try to do what we can to help him.
You know what's interesting about Joe Stalin? When he would make these speeches before the apparatchiks and others who had to get up and applaud like seals, is he had a button underneath his podium there at the Politburo. And when he would hit that button, the applause thing would go off like it was at Hollywood, you know, when
like
they had
the
can.
Like a game show.
And everyone had to stop so he could continue. And then naturally, the next time he wanted applause, he'd hit the button. The question is, whose button was bigger?
Right. Come on.
Was it Khrushchev's button? Was it Stalin's button? Or was it Vladimir Lenin? No, not John Lennon of the Beatles. Vladimir Lenin.
We're giving you a history lesson, everybody.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Your response to what outgoing Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona said earlier today from the well of the Senate, where he compared our president to Joe Stalin in terms of how he deals with the media. Man, that was way off the hook. 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is Harry, who I believe is calling from the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Harry?
Hi, Harry.
Hi. Well, Flake is just, you know, he's just a flake, basically. He's just mainstream. He's a globalist, you know, mainstream Republican. But I wanted to, comment. You guys were putting out fake news. You said that in Germany that Turks don't get citizenship. That's categorically untrue. Turks who've lived there and have been there, born there, do get citizenship, number one. Number two, you said all these people are working already, all these migrants are coming in, and they're working already. If you look it up, it's less than 5% actually have jobs. And on that same note, too, when you talk about, you know, the jobs that Americans won't do, then that's why we should bring in all these people, all these migrants, because these are jobs that Americans won't do. That is like the dumbest thing you could possibly say.
Really?
But
Harry,
it's the truth.
Harry is the Encyclopedia Britannica here.
I know.
Why were the Turks brought into Germany, Harry?
No. They were brought in to do all the dirty work.
Oh, they'd be like the Mexicans, right? Like the Mexicans.
Well, no, more like Africans, but they were brought
okay,
in.
Okay, Africans, Mexicans, whatever you want to describe
no,
them
they
as.
They were brought, but they voluntarily came.
Okay, so they're third generation. Encyclopedia Britannica. The third generation of Turks, they are not going to do that labor any longer, correct?
No, that's not what you said. You said they don't get citizenship.
Excuse me. Are they going to do that labor anymore, their grandchildren?
Of course not. I know you.
Okay, so now where do you get the labor? Where do you get the labor for an industrial complex like Germany, powerful in the world, like Red China, like the United States, like Japan, to actually do the manual labor necessary to man the assembly lines at all of their plants?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When 5% of these, apparently.
Excuse me, you didn't answer the question. Where do you get that labor?
They're going to have to come domestically, and if they don't come domestically, you don't get.
Oh, what a schmuck.
They're not going to come domestically. Encyclopedia Britannica doesn't understand that they don't come domestically, and that's why we've opened the doors. And listen, I think good folks who come over, like the folks, and listen, they work their butts off to do it.
That Angela Merkel, as pragmatic a politician as she is, in charge of really the European Union and the mightiest country in all of Europe
for its
industrial output, didn't want to bring in these people to work jobs at low pay without benefits?
No question. And with, by the way, as we've unfortunately seen, with some risks, too, because there's been a lot of problems over there, too. And she has continued to support that policy.
Oh, yeah, because they need the labor. If you notice, the industrial barons, they haven't condemned her, have they?
No, and in fact, you've heard peep, 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 peep,
exactly.
Peep, nada,
exactly.
Nada.
1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
And it is 6 minutes after the hour here on 77 WABC. This
recognize
is Rita Cosby.
This song, Rita Cosby?
I sure do. It's a theme from Parks and Rec, which, of course, is a great comedy and very funny. And the big star of it, one of the big stars, there are a lot of big stars on it, I should say, but Aziz Ansari.
Oh, yeah, he was a breakout star.
Big star, yeah.
You didn't really know much about him before then.
And, yeah, absolutely. And Master of None, and now he's become a big name and going to the Emmys and all these different things. And
huge comedian downstairs. He had a one-man show, Madison Square Garden, packed it out. But he's ended up in double trouble. What did he do?
Yeah, well, now a woman has come forward, and he's sort of the latest, person been accused in the slew of people that we're talking about with Harvey Weinstein and so many others. And it goes back to a woman who has remained anonymous, a 23-year-old Brooklyn-based photographer, someone here in our area, who says that they had a bad date after she met him at a 2017 Emmy Awards party. And she goes beyond a bad date. She says, basically, that he assaulted me, that he forced me to engage in sexual acts. And she made these comments. What's so interesting about this, Curtis, is she said after this date that she had with him, and she admits that they were flirting and she went on a date with him, she said that she sent him a message saying, look, I was not comfortable with last night. Basically, it made me uneasy. And she texted him and he texted her back. Clearly, I misread things in the moment and I'm truly sorry. That was at the time. But now she has come out and said he crossed the line.
Well, I think that's because she saw him at the Golden Globes receiving an award with the Me Too badge on. And I think that sort of got her agitated. So then now she's come forward.
And she's saying that he is basically, a Harvey Weinstein. I mean, once you label somebody in that thing and says that he totally crossed the line. Well, someone has come to his defense and spoken out. And it's a very familiar face that many of us know. Great TV host Ashley Banfield. Of course, she hosts on HLN Crime and Justice, 6 to 8 p.m. on HLN. And Ashley, I've known you a long time. And you came out pretty forcefully in his defense. Why did you feel it was important to speak out?
Hey, Rita, thanks so much for having me on. And also, Curtis, it's great to hear you again. We used to work together as well, so I'm really glad to be on with both of you. Listen, there's something I really want to make crystal clear. I'm not defending Aziz Ansari. I thought his described behavior by this anonymous accuser was disgusting. I wouldn't have wanted to be in that boat. I think it's disgusting. I don't think it rises to the level of assault. I don't think it, by her description, rises to any kind of sexual harassment. And therefore, I do not believe going to the press and thereby consigning him to a future that could have included a complete career blackball was appropriate. And also, what that does to the actual movement of women who have truly been maligned, assaulted, diminished, fired, wiped out, blackballed, it is very damaging. So that's where my perspective is.
And actually, you bring up a good point because I'll tell you, when I read it, and it's interesting, and you and I, we've known each other a long time, we've never talked about this, but there are clear cases where people have crossed the line, and like I think a Harvey Weinstein and some of these others. But I thought you used an interesting description in this because you said it was a bad date. I think many of us, and I can speak for myself, I've been in situations where you say, I wasn't comfortable with that, but do I take some responsibility for maybe not being clear, maybe not being vocal and saying, don't do that?
Yeah, and I think this is where the conversation is important. We all need to have a conversation about what it is we want and what it is we don't want as women. I am many decades out of the hookup culture. I have no clue about this hookup culture, and I'll just admit that. I think it's wrong, but I'm also not living in the millennials' shoes.
And I agree with you.
But if you walk into that culture and you spend a half an hour in a man's apartment naked, and after unpleasant and inappropriate advances, continue to engage in behavior with him, then it's on you. Because you can't have it both ways. You can't ask for the hookup culture. You can't throw your clothes off and canoodle on a couch and hope that it'll just be movies. I'm not saying that if you got a short skirt on at the bus stop, you were asking for it, because that's how I grew up, and it's crap. What I am saying is I think she went way too far to beg for the protections of of a culture that doesn't see her as a victim at this point, certainly not with her own described actions.
Let me ask you also, Ashley, have you gotten backlash from people in the Me Too movement because, you know, they're saying, wait a minute, you're supposed to be supporting us. Is someone misinterpreting the comments too?
You know, what I am shocked at, and Rita, you're no stranger to how the media zeitgeist can whiplash you. I expected pot shots. I expected, actually, to be crucified by many. It didn't happen. I mean, almost universally, the reaction that I got was very positive, very supportive. And let me qualify that. There were those who, you know, used choice words for me online, but it was such a small minority, and they were so inarticulate about why they were angry, I don't give them credence. But I think why I had the support that I did was because I am a Me Too-er. I have lived in my 3 decades of broadcasting through the sludge, and I have had this experience. And so I'm thrilled with the movement. It's going to benefit me as I continue to prosecute my career, and it's going to help her at 23 years old, because she presumably has a long career ahead of her, and it will be much, much better for her than it was for me because of the Me Too movement. My issue is that she took a pickaxe to that movement with this kind of an accusation that gave a death sentence to a guy who didn't deserve a death sentence.
Right. Well, you know, generally what we do now, Ashley, is when there is that first allegation, everybody holds their breath because they're saying, okay, will there be a second, a third, or a fourth? And that's generally when the jury comes back and says, guilty on all charges. But when it's just one single solitary charge in which I think we can all agree this is not rape, but that he is just a real putz.
And she made some bad choices, too.
Right, but this guy, Aziz Ansari, just didn't seem to catch the signals. Because, you know, men, we're not taught to read nonverbal cues of discomfort. If you've been insatiably sort of watching porno, think that those kind of reactions are actually a woman saying, oh, yeah, do it more. Whereas in many instances, it's a woman who is discomforted. She herself may feel that it's almost like coerced consent. Like, what do I do? How do I get out of this?
Well, that's the point. And I think that's what Ashley is talking about, too. And I also think women, and I think no means no. And I think if you're putting signals, you shouldn't be pushing. But I think sometimes women, and I hope that that's a good thing that comes out of the Me Too movement, that suddenly now women feel more empowered to say, to really speak up and make it no gray areas, don't you think, Ashley?
I do, but let's be super clear about the fact pattern of her description. She felt very uncomfortable from the get-go with the speed with which, you know, Aziz Ansari was behaving to move towards pretty aggressive sex. In the middle of all of this, she needed a 5-minute break to collect herself in the bathroom, where apparently, by her description, she was naked and splashing water on her face to get it together because she was so, so alarmed. And after that would be the time
to say, leave.
I'm a big girl. Yep. I'm not a baby. I make my own choices. I know how to get a cab. I'm putting my clothes on. This guy isn't pleasant. And you put your clothes on and you shake this big star's hand, and you decide against basking in his celebrity aura because it isn't worth it. Instead, she emerged from that bathroom and suggested they chill on the couch together while still naked. Now, if that's not a signal to a guy that it's going well, maybe she needs a break. I don't know what is, but I do know one thing. I'm not a baby. I'm not a snowflake. Don't infantilize me. As a woman, I can make these choices, and I can direct my own future.
Now,
but, hold on.
Yes.
It's important to note, there are women who are forced, legitimately forced,
yep,
and can't escape. They are aggressively held against their will. They are paralyzed in fear because of the behavior. That's different. She did not describe that.
And right, the other thing, too, in this case,
right, but there
you know,
are,
and in this case, it's not like there's a offering a job or anything either. We even haven't heard that either. Like he was trying to hold something over her too, like a Weinstein was,
right,
saying, I'll give you a part.
If we look at the culture in colleges that have tried to address this, they've published manuals now that say you need a green light every step of the way. So even though you may have had a green light to go to first base and a yellow light to go to second base, you still have to find out if you can go to third base or slide home or whatever it is you have as an intent. Is that what this is all leading to?
I think what this is leading to is putting a big check on the Me Too movement and saying, let's not delegitimize the very worthy people who've come forward and told these painful stories, because they truly are victims and it is painful and they have suffered and they might not be working at this moment because of it. Let's not diminish or mitigate their stories, their feelings, and their experiences. Let's continue to put the bad guys where they belong to be. But let's not all suggest because we had a sloppy date that was gross that all of a sudden we deserve some kind of public retribution. That's what I'm saying.
And everybody, yes, we're talking. Go ahead, Ashley, go ahead.
And let's have a conversation about what women want. But don't ask for the hookup culture and then expect to be, you know, given green lights and orange lights along the way. A hookup culture suggests, I'm down for this. Don't be down for it.
All right,
Ashley, how about start from there?
Ashley, another person, a lot older than Aziz, Michael Douglas, was also seen wearing that Me Too button. And another woman who had worked with him many years before that, like 30 years before that, said, you sanctimonious hypocrite, when I worked in your production company, you took advantage of me. You were molesting me. You were fondling me.
And by the way, he says that that's not true. Remember, he did the preemptive on
that.
Right,
but isn't some of this, Ashley, is because all of a sudden these guys are wearing these buttons, and maybe they themselves have sort of been in that gray area. A woman is watching and says, what?
If indeed legitimately, you bring up an excellent point, because if indeed legitimately they did do something, if you saw it, you'd be like, hey, wait a minute, especially in this environment, you feel emboldened to speak out.
So it's a really good point, because for a generation that thought like George Bush thought, pinching someone's bottom and making a joke about David Copperfield was completely acceptable in public, they are learning a very new reality in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And do we want the death penalty for them as well? Or do we want a serious correction that means we mean business here? I take big issue with trying to end the careers of men who, say, once upon a time had no idea that this was wrong. I think Harvey Weinstein knew bloody well what he was doing was wrong. He didn't care.
Yeah, I don't think there's any gray there. You know,
there's no gray area.
And everybody, we're talking to Ashley Banfield, who, of course, is the great host there on HLN Crime and Justice, 6 to 8 p.m. on HLN. I love filling in for you when I'm there, Ashley. And before I let you go, I got to ask you, have you heard from Aziz Ansari or any guys in response to you speaking out like this?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that, Rita. We reached out to him many times yesterday. He refused to come on the program last night. I got it, and that's fine. But I do question why he refused. It was a good opportunity to advance this conversation. And I'll tell you something. I want everyone to be crystal clear. I am not his defender. I am a defender of the movement, and I want to make sure it doesn't run amok. I want to make sure that pendulum doesn't swing so far out it comes back and crushes the foundation like a wrecking ball. So let's be clear. I'm not his defender. I think he should have come on last night and faced all of this head on. He refused. I'm curious to know why.
Yeah, me too, by the way. What do you think? That's interesting. You think he'd say, I'm thrilled. I mean, I you were so vocal.
All right, but Ashley, now that you've said we shouldn't give him the death penalty, in this case, Aziz Ansari, would you agree with me? Although I know you're a Canadian, you're opposed to the death penalty. But we got this predator, Larry Nassar, in Michigan, who went on trial. 100 young girls, well now young ladies, have come forward and say, as the teen therapist and doctor, they were violated sometimes while their parents were in the same room.
Now, let me. This
Could
is,
we give this guy the death penalty?
This
please,
is the Olympic
please?
Gymnastic
yes,
guy. This
yes,
is the
yes,
Olympic
yes,
the doctor. Yes, yep.
Please, please.
Yeah. So I feel really strongly about two things with regard to that. Number one, I feel strongly that sentencing guidelines have expanded over the decades to put these kinds of men away for life, okay, and women. You put people away for life when they are this egregious in the way they commit their crimes against women and children and men, too. your second question was about the death penalty.
I'll tell you
about the death penalty, not for sex assault. I think, you know, Americans have decided at a rate of about 50-50 to do away with the worst of the worst. And here's my problem. You don't know how imperfect we are until you walk the shoes of the justice system. And when you see the errors that are made, even when the case looks perfect, even when the DNA looks like a lock, guess what? We're not perfect. And until we're perfect, we shouldn't be killing people. And that's just where I feel. It's not about retribution. If it happened to my family, I could pull that lever myself. But it's about not being perfect. And one sacrificial lamb who's innocent who goes to the death chamber is not worth it in my estimation.
Ashley, great to have you here. And I hope Aziz Ansari comes on your show because, you know, you speaking out, and I think very eloquently and powerfully, my friend, on this. And I think it was very important to have your voice on it. He better take you up on it and come on your show at some point.
Well, listen, Rita, thanks so much for having me on. Thank you for doing my show as well. We love you here. And Curtis, I miss you. It's been too long. We got to get together.
No problem. Anyway,
great
that's
to have
Ashley
you here,
Banfield.
Ashley. Thank you, honey. Great to have you here.
Meantime, I want to ask a broader question. Since dozens of these young gymnasts who are now young women have testified against Larry Nassar, who was their trainer at both Michigan State and for the United States Olympic Gymnastic Committee in Michigan, over 100 violated.
And by the way, some very big names,
right.
Gabby Douglas.
Right. But
I mean,
sometimes, believe
names.
It or not, while the parents win that room, that's how adept this guy was. He's admitted this. It's not like he's saying, no, come on, can't we kill him? Come on, I just want one person. I want to kill this guy.
Let's see if we get a caller who agrees
with you on
that. Let's
find out. I want to kill this guy. I want to strangle him.
I'd like to stone him. Let's
well, how
do
about
that.
The parents?
Let's stone. Well, that's the thing.
How about letting them?
Well, you don't know what the parents know and didn't know. But, you know, a lot of crazy things happen and you
no,
don't realize it.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Oh, yeah, here's Woody Allen from Brighton Beach playing his clarinet. It's part of his New Orleans Dixie Jazz Band. It's one of his many eccentricities, as he likes to refer to it as, but he's best known.
One of his many eccentricities.
As a writer and a director of major motion pictures. The most recent one was Wonder Wheel about Coney Island. Apparently he didn't do too well at the box office, but for a lot of actors or actresses who may have seen their best day a month or Sundays ago, it's a chance at a revival. And for a lot of young huckleberries out there trying to make their bones in the business, oftentimes it's the start that they need to end up being drafted and brought into other productions. But boy, he's got two of his stepchildren who are like on his jockstrap.
Yeah, oh my God. Dylan Farrow, of course, who was adopted by him later, and so later, you know, he became her father. He was a father, says that she was sexually molested, and she said, and listen, I remember these claims. She made these claims years and years ago. They were investigated, which I wonder now, was it like a Harvey Weinstein investigation? And now she's come out and said, listen, after all this Me Too stuff, you know, we need to have our voices heard. This guy molested me. He abused me repeatedly. And she is on his tail and saying the world needs to know. And then on the flip side, we got actors and we got Alec Baldwin and others who are saying basically leave Woody alone.
Well, they're saying leave Woody alone because this was already vetted out, investigated. It was no bill of goods, no charges against him.
But,
now, remember.
But I go back to like a Harvey Weinstein. Could
yes.
this, you know, I mean, this, you know, all the times that we know Harvey Weinstein was being looked at and no charges were filed there.
Oh, no doubt. And Dylan Farrow said that as a youngster, I think seven, Woody took her up in a crawl space and violated her. And she has been railing out against him on a regular basis in tandem with her brother, Ronan Farrow, who, let's face it, took down Harvey Weinstein when NBC would not go forward with his mini documentary on the many violations that Harvey Weinstein committed while at Miramax. So you have a joint effort here. And they are saying to stars and starlets who've already appeared in Woody Allen movies, you need to renounce the fact that you appeared in those movies. And heavens to Betsy, you should not even consider even trying out or showing up at a casting call for any of his future movies, because that would be a double shanda, a double disgrazia. Some have opted on to that, and others, as you mentioned, like Alec Baldwin, it says, show me the evidence. Show me the documentary evidence, because as far as I can see, he was already examined by law enforcement, and he was given a clean bill of health. Although, when you think about what his wife charged him with, if you remember Mia Farrow, who ironically had been married to Frank Sinatra. I could never quite figure that one out.
Yeah, remember all the stuff of whether Ronan Farrow is the son or not, you know?
No, it looks like Frank.
Yeah,
by the way,
I was with Ronan Farrow right after all that stuff was coming out, and I looked at him, your jaw drops, he looks just like old Blue Eyes.
But you see, what supporters of Woody Allen are saying is, oh, Mia, she's just upset that Woody Allen developed a relationship with her other adopted daughter, Sunyi Previn.
Well, and that's where I go to. And I'll tell you, I remember when that whole thing came about, and Sunyi Previn, who we still kind of don't even really, we sort of know the age, we're not sure. I mean, that was the weirdest thing. She's the adopted daughter of Mia Farrow and Andre Previn. And then, of course, Mia ends a relationship and has this long-term relationship with Woody Allen. Woody later adopts her and then has a relationship with her, and he's 35 years older. And when she came over at the time to America, she didn't know what, she couldn't speak a language. She had learning disabilities, and he takes her under his wing and has this love relationship. And what's so creepy, Curtis, is years ago, I remember reading this, he was saying, oh, you know, when people were going, what's up with you with this adopted daughter of yours, which was just weird and yucky. Well, it's a paternal relationship. She looks at me like a father. That's not the kind of father I want.
Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. It's now time for Woody Allen. Many are saying, hey, you're 82. We've given you the benefit of the doubt over the years. Why not just go into retirement? Let's put you on the shelf. Let's remember you for your eccentricities, your weirdness, but also your great filmmaking ability.
Well, and also in this environment now, too, where everything is coming out, and you look at the history with this guy, with this crazy thing with this adopted daughter, I always thought it was yucky. I always thought it was weird. And I find it odd that people are still standing by him in this environment of Harvey Weinstein and everything else.
I think this is where the guy down below us, James Dolan, owner of Madison Square Garden and the Knicks, has to make a stand. Because remember, he was right in the midst of the mishigash involving Harvey Weinstein. Harvey would go over to Radio City Music Hall, which is owned by James Dolan. And he'd say, I'd like to go backstage and perv on the Rockettes. Although he obviously didn't tell him perv.
Yeah, but I was going to say, James Dolan knew
what Harvey Weinstein was up to. So he was enabling him.
You don't know that.
Oh, yes, he is. Because James Dolan, that's what he does. He loves the rich, the powerful, and the famous. And Woody Allen, he always has ringside seats, right? Courtside seats to Knick games. He's a fanatical Knick fan. And he shows up with it's so confusing. It's like they're three-eyed cousin fornicators. His stepdaughter, who was adopted from overseas.
Yes.
That
South Korea.
He helped raise with Mia Farrow, his wife at the time. But then he decided, Mia, that's it. No longer interested in you. I'm going to marry our stepdaughter.
Yeah, which is just, and by the way, it's not just stepdaughter.
Is that freaky deaky?
That's why I'm telling you, I think the whole thing was so weird. And when it happened, I thought,
this guy
yuck.
A perv?
I thought it was yuck.
Anyway, let's open up our phone lines, 1-800-848-WABC. Are you like Alec Baldwin saying, hey, leave the old codger alone? Yeah, he's got a few more films in him, like Clint Eastwood. 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to John, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC. Johnny?
Hi, John.
How's it going, Curtis? How's it going?
Doing well, doing well. What do you think of good old Woody? Should he keep going?
This is what I have to say. Words only have one definition. Crime is a crime. Violation is a violation. Prove the man guilty. If he's guilty, he should pay the price.
Well, let me throw something out at you, John, because in light of all the Harvey Weinstein moments, maybe it should be reinvestigated again. There was so much pressure. Remember, first, there were no charges on Harvey Weinstein. He got a clean bill of health, and it was looked into, and now they're putting, because of all the public pressure, there's an epiphany, and law enforcement is suddenly looking at him again. Maybe this needs to be re-looked at again, John.
It most certainly should. This is a very big issue, and someone up above, someone higher should step into this. Now, this all circle around to me as the double standard that goes on in this country. It's okay for Hollywood to act and do these things, but if it was a Donald Trump who did what Harvey Weinstein, forget it, the media would, there would be an explosion.
Remember, the president is immersed in the middle of an allegation right now in which his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, may have given $130,000 to a porno princess for a non-disclosure agreement 1 month before the vote tally against Hillary Rodham Clinton, so she would not do an interview with Good Morning America and continue an interview she was doing with Slate Magazine. I mean, the president has his own series of problems in this arena.
You still there?
Yeah.
As I said in the beginning, until proven guilty, somebody should look into it.
All right, but let's assume, John, let's assume, just like with Bill O'Reilly, that these allegations might be true, because why would you sign a non-disclosure agreement? Why would you give somebody attacking you or accusing you of having sex with them while you were married, having an affair with them that went on for a year? This is what the porno princess claims. Why would you pay them off to make them go away and then, by paying them the money, make sure that they shut their mouth, because it would be a legal price to pay if you broke that agreement?
Well, because they have a lot of money, and it's just easier to shut up and go away.
And listen, a lot of people do that. A lot of people do. They say, okay, I'm just going to pay it off and move on.
It doesn't mean that person did something wrong. It's just more convenient to be like, yeah, this is what you want. Get away from me. It actually probably would have been cheaper in the long run.
Well, actually, Michael Cohen, his personal attorney, said this never occurred.
Yeah, he has
but he
not
will
confirmed.
Not address whether, in fact, he drew up the non-disclosure agreement that this woman used a bogus name, apparently, to sign, as did Donald Trump.
Yeah, the Stormy. By the way, and on the non-disclosure front, I'm just seeing that this, remember we were talking about the pervy doctor there, the Michigan State doctor, Larry Nassar. Now they're saying that the U.S. Gymnastics is going to revoke. They actually had a fine on the girl who spoke out because she had a non-disclosure.
Yes.
Well, now the U.S. Gymnastics team has just announced that they are revoking the fine and not going to fine her.
Can you imagine?
In this climate.
In this
climate,
who in that, like Bill O'Reilly has said, I'm going to sue. You know, this one woman, I forget her name, who decided, screw you and your non-disclosure clause. You've been maligning me. You broke that, weeks ago. And he said, I'm going to sue. He's yet to sue.
Yeah, he is
nobody,
yet to sue.
Nobody. The president is not going to sue. O'Reilly's not going to sue. Remember, Harvey said he was going to sue the New York Times when they broke this story.
And you know why? Because the minute you sue, then all the other stuff comes out. It's fair game on the other end, too. If you go after them, guess what? More could be coming.
Who went into the newsroom to lobby on behalf of Harvey Weinstein? Russell Crowe from Australia, the actor.
Matt Damon.
Now, all of a sudden, Matt Damon, who keeps sticking his foot in his mouth, has decided, I'm going to chill out. I'm taking a chill pill. I'm not talking anymore.
Well, it has been interesting. He's kind of gone undercover suddenly, which is very interesting. Let's go to the calls. Let's go to John from North Bergen. John, you're here with Rita and Curtis on 77 WABC. Go ahead.
Yeah, Curtis. Let's assume the president went with that the porn star. To me, that's like a financial transaction. It's not against the law to cheat on your wife. I mean, that's one thing. Harvey Weinstein was basically abusing and taking advantage of, people, actresses or whomever trying to, rise up in their industry.
Well, let me ask you, John, let me ask you a question. And I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree with it whatsoever, because I still feel like whatever a president's behavior is fair game. That's what happens when you run for president. It's an open book.
Well, at the time, he was married to Melania. She was already pregnant with his son. And apparently, if you believe Stormy and her other porno princess, they had been frolicking together for a year.
Yeah, it sounds like she's saying it. Well, and what's been interesting is the early report, she denied it. Then someone said, no, a friend of hers. We sort of have yet to hear from her directly.
I'm just interested in one thing about this.
You just want the gritty details,
no,
don't you?
No.
All right, what do you want to know?
The friend said, remember,
what do you want to know, if he really is 235 pounds with his clothes off?
The other porno princess.
Is that where you were going?
No, the other porno princess said that she was called up by Stormy. She said, come on over, we're having a party. Then Trump gets on the phone. Yeah, yeah, come on, we'll make it a threesome. And then the next day, Stormy tells her porno princess friend, who did not come over, oh, yeah, he was chasing me in his tidy whities. I'd like to see a picture of then-citizen Trump in his tidy whities.
Can you imagine that? That's worth more than paying off $130,000. And by the way, at this point, you got to remember, this is, you know, question the source, too. You don't know if it's true. We don't
well,
know.
Look,
don't
the National
know.
Enquirer, who has protected the president, paid off a Playboy bunny who made similar allegations, paid her an incredible amount of money, said they were going to publish the story, never did, in fact, published some column she wrote about fitness. They bought her off, 1-800. 848-WABC.